Welcome to Between the Lines, a monthly magazine show on the third Thursday of every month at 2 p.m. on WGXC at 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper.
Tell me the truth, to burden your mouth for what you say, and pieces of paper in the way, 'cause I can't continue pretending to choose these opposite sides on which we fall, loving you later as if at all.
My first guest is Terry Schaff, a yoga instructor as well as a medical yoga therapist who's based here in the Hudson Valley and works with several well-known doctors and physical therapists here and in New York City. Medical yoga therapy is a new, rapidly growing branch of both yoga and medicine that looks set to explode with the aging of the baby boomers. Terry also teaches water yoga and works with Families of Promise, the Hudson-based after-school program offering yoga for at-risk youth, families, and also senior citizens. Terry is also my yogini or yoga teacher, whose classes I've been attending for about 10 years now. Welcome to Between the Lines, Terry. So first of all, let me just ask you, what exactly is medical yoga medical therapy or medical yoga therapy?
If one is practicing medical yoga therapy, in my view, they need to have a physician or someone else in the medical profession who is diagnosing what is wrong with the person that they're who is visiting them, who's seeing them, and comes up with a understanding of the root cause of the problem, and then ideally is writing a script, a prescription for what needs to be done. In my case, I work with a team of physiatrists, rehabilitation doctors in New York City at a practice called Manhattan Physical Medicine. And these doctors use all kinds of tests. They use MRIs, they use x-rays, they test nerves. And then when they come up with a diagnosis, then if it's appropriate, they give me a prescription pad. And it will say, for instance, herniated disc or spinal stenosis. And then they will write on it what yoga postures, in their opinion, from their experience, from our experience, we can use to help make that condition better.
So they are recommending the yoga poses to you. So they obviously have to know a bit about yoga as well then.
So the principal physician that I work with, Dr. Lauren Fishman, has been using yoga in his practice for over 40 years. And he's been practicing himself since before he went to medical school. He spent a year in India studying with BKS Iyengar. He's written over 8 books on yoga and medicine and over 80 articles. And we're conducting studies in our office on yoga and medicine. The two principal studies going on at the moment is one on yoga for osteoporosis and the other one for scoliosis.
What's your own background and how did you evolve into a medical yoga therapist?
You know, I slipped in the door backwards, I think, or skidded. I started a yoga practice when I was 19 at Princeton University. And I was a history and philosophy of science major. And one of my professors introduced some of us to yoga. My then boyfriend went on to be a Rhodes Scholar and to leave that to become a Thai monk. And
wow.
yes, and a meditation teacher. And I continued doing yoga for over 20 years and then decided that maybe I should learn something about what I was doing. At that point, I did a yoga teacher training, never with the expectation that that would become a profession. But all of the processes of having to take tests, have to practice teaching got me interested. And once I got certified, very quickly, I decided there were plenty of yoga teachers, kind of, there's no regular yoga teachers, but yoga teachers teaching beautiful yoga classes. I wanted to work with people who were living with physical issues. And I started taking more classes like anatomy and physiology.
Now, did you have to take any training tests? I mean, any kind of a degree or a license or anything?
That's another really excellent question. As you mentioned at the start of our talk, this is an area that is just burgeoning. And there's two associations that deal with yoga. One is Yoga Alliance, and the other is the International Association of Yoga Therapists. They've carved the world of certification into two halves. Yoga Alliance deals with registering certified yoga teachers. That's yoga teachers who've gone through yoga schools recognized by Yoga Alliance. The International Association of Yoga Therapists set a criteria of what you needed as far as a body of work to become a member. In the last 5 years, they have set out what they think you should have to be a practicing yoga therapist. How many courses, how many hours of work, and ideas of what they think you should do. It's still in the budding stages. There is no licensing yet for being a yoga therapist. There's only the beginning of being certified. So at this point, it's a bit of a crapshoot of who's doing what, and you really do need to check what kind of background a person has. In my opinion, in the next 10 years, you're going to need to be a physical therapist with a specialty in yoga. Mm-hmm. Not everybody agrees with me, but I think that you should really have a serious body of medical knowledge before you do this work, or you do it in the way that I do it. I work in a team with people who have the medical knowledge that I don't.
Interesting, especially considering that there has been quite a lot of publicity recently and controversy over yoga injuring people.
This is my concern about yoga teachers, maybe in this instance, that the person who's teaching it doesn't know what it means to derange an SI joint, that they don't necessarily know where is the hip joint. And we should be folding at our joints where a bone meets a bone, which is why if we fold from the waist, we're often pulling the muscles in the back because there is no bone that connects the hip to your rib cage. There are muscles there, but there is a bone at the hip joint, which is where your thigh connects to your acetabulum, the socket of the hip. That's where we should be folding with less stress on our body, less chance of pulling a muscle.
And now there's been a book written about this. What's the name of
the book? The name of the book is called The Science of Yoga, and it was written by a journalist named William Broad. My concern about his writing this book, which became very sensationalist, is that the word, is that we know you can get injured running, you can get injured swimming, you can get injured doing anything. I don't think the injuries in yoga fall into any different category in that area than anywhere else. I don't think there's an implicit danger of getting injured in yoga. But as with any sport or any skill, you want to know what the areas of concern are so you avoid them and take care of yourself. And one would be, and this is true for everything, there is no moving through pain. Pain is a sign something is wrong and you should back off from it. We need to be very careful as both teachers and students when we're twisting or moving, say, I could just go a little further and think about, well, maybe I should not just go a little.
I do that all the time. I always want to, like, you know, go that kind of extra inch or whatever.
Go that extra inch and then go. And then you feel like, twang. Oh, I just pulled a muscle. What does that mean? I'm going to get inflammation. I injured something. So pay attention to it. There's no working through it. You back off.
So in this case, the saying, no pain, no gain, definitely doesn't apply here.
It definitely does not apply here. There are cases where no pain, no gain, but that is not us doing to ourselves. That means I've dislocated a shoulder and a physical therapist or medical professional is moving it back in place. But what does that mean? What is the shoulder? In that case, it's the arm bone popping out of the shoulder socket, a displaced hip, not my hip higher than another hip, one hip in front of the other. No, my femur bone popped out of the hip socket.
Okay, and we're going to just take a short break. I'm Anne Forbes Cooper. I'm here with Terry Schaaf, who is a medical yoga therapist. We'll be right back. Just joining us, I'm here with Terry Schaaf, yoga medical therapist. But is there any actual scientific evidence that this works?
That is also being amassed as quickly as people can do it. You know, in this area, there's not a lot of funding. And as I said, we have two studies that we're doing in our office, one on osteoporosis, which is the loss of bone density, and the using of a set group of poses that we have people practicing and getting bone density tests 2 years after they've started. And we're seeing very positive results for people who practice 10 to 20 minutes a day mm-hmm. on poses that are weight-bearing, that you need to balance in, that stress your bones and build your muscles. Activities that cause the body to generate bone more quickly than it's losing it. The other study that we have going on is with scoliosis, people whose spines, instead of being vertically up and down, are going horizontally, either in an S curve or a U curve. And we have a group of people practicing 2 to 3 yoga poses, and we're seeing tremendous changes in the curvature of the spine in as little as 3 months. But these are early studies. There have been other studies that have gone on showing that practicing yoga lowers stress, lowers blood pressure. Medicare now pays for yoga therapy for people with serious heart disease.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I did not know that. That's encouraging, isn't it?
It is encouraging, but be careful what you ask for. Mm. With the way that things are changing, with what insurance companies will pay out on, yoga teachers and yoga therapists might find that the remuneration is much smaller than they might have thought. It's happened with physical therapy. So physical therapy sessions, which used to be an hour, are going down to 45 minutes to half an hour, to putting people on STEM, leaving them with a certain amount of heat pads or cooling pads, and less hand-on-hand treatment, and less giving people physical exercises to do that are supervised, because it takes more time and one-on-one attention.
Mm-hmm. And I've also heard that it's used a lot with people with Parkinson's and perhaps chronic pain as well.
It's used very effectively as a method for reducing stress, people living with ongoing pain. There are studies going on now for people with Parkinson's disease, people recovering from strokes, people with arthritis. There are studies going on. It really is a very safe way to increase your range of motion when you've got inflammation of your joints. I've been working in a warm water pool in Rhinebeck for about 5 years. And I work with about 70 different people in this pool, and everyone across the board, health is improving. And this is an older group of people. Everyone is at least 70 years old and older, and sees dramatic changes. It's great for arthritis. It's great for osteoporosis. Fabulous for people with balance issues. There are no therapy pools in our area around here. So both Northern Dutchess and Columbia Memorial up in Hudson may refer people to join in these classes, which are really reasonably priced down at Arbor Ridge at Brookmead. There have never been, as far as I know, any water yoga programs taught through the big yoga retreat centers. And for the first time this June, Omega is sponsoring my teaching this curriculum to people through them, and it'll take place in that Arbor Ridge pool.
Yeah. So water yoga is actually now being recognized as another branch of medical yoga therapy.
It is definitely being recognized. It's also being physical therapists are very interested in learning it. And I work, as I mentioned, in the medical practice that I'm in New York City with physical therapists. And my favorite physical therapist to work with, his name is Purnima Singh. And she wrote her master's thesis for her master's in PT on Parkinson's and yoga. And so together, we're developing curriculum to give continuing ed credits to certify physical therapists in yoga therapy. And that will be a very interesting development.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine a school of medical yoga therapy? I mean, and you are also involved in training, doing some training, right?
I am. I train people with Dr. Lauren Fishman at Kripalu. We'll be there in July teaching a program for low back pain. Purnima and I will be teaching a curriculum at Kripalu next spring on yoga and PT for healthy hips. And I think that what will happen is the units that we develop, that Dr. Fishman and I develop, that Purnima and I develop, will become incorporated into other schools that maybe deal with other areas. Our areas deal with musculoskeletal main issues mainly and nerve issues.
How did this originate, yoga medical therapy?
You know, it's an excellent question. In the last 10, 15 years, as yoga has increased in popularity, we started seeing that it almost looked like it was becoming the panacea for all ills. But
that's true. There's so many different kinds of yoga now.
There's so many different kinds of yoga. So I think two things. People are looking for alternatives to surgery and medication. As you said, as the baby boomers were getting older, we're trying to stay as fit as possible. People are also changing their attitude a little bit towards their health. Instead of saying, I don't know, want to know what's wrong, just fix it, they're beginning to realize that they're going in and out of doctor's offices with a diagnosis, but not with a plan for how to deal with it. And so yoga starts to become very attractive if you say, here, I'll teach you to do this. I'll give you a plan and you can take care of it on your own.
I mean, it's true. Yoga is entering into so many aspects of our life now. I was just reading that they have yoga on paddle boards, you know, out on the Hudson. They're starting to do that. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, there's yoga with dogs.
You know, some of it's a little bit ludicrous. I've tried yoga on a paddleboard,
Oh, you
and I
have?
have on the Potomac, and I thought that I thought I'm going to fall off into this not so clean water. I'm stopping and I'm getting back in my kayak.
Yeah, well, as somebody who's tried paddleboarding and didn't much care for it, I doubt that I'd like yoga on a paddleboard. But anyway, it's an interesting development.
I think it's an exciting time. The problem I see, people come up to me a lot because I do train people. We train people in our practice. We are teaching practice. There's always doctors observing what we're doing, physical therapists, and yoga people. And often I hear, I want to be a yoga therapist. And I go, so how long have you been trained as a yoga teacher? Oh, I've only been doing yoga a few months. If you want to do this kind of work, you are really going to need a medical education and be interested in that as much as you need a yoga education. And it's not a quick fix. A lot of studios make their money by certifying yoga teachers. You can get in and out of a program within literally weeks or months. That kind of training is not going to prepare you for this work. If you want to do this kind of work, you need to be in a yoga program that has an emphasis on an understanding of how the body works.
You mentioned briefly India. Is this practiced in India?
It is practiced in India, and in fact, a number of the studies on yoga and medicine are coming out of India. And if you talk to most yogi gurus, they're going to say to you that doing this practice is good for your overall health, that it's good for your body and it's good for your mind. The difference between medical yoga therapy and an overall yoga practice is something's wrong and we're looking at a specific issue and we may be doing something asymmetrically to make you better. We might not be using the muscles on both sides of the body in the same way, and that is very different than going into a yoga class.
Okay, and we're just going to take a quick break. This is Between the Lines. You're listening to Anne Forbes Cooper, and I'm here with medical yoga therapist Terry Schaaf.
Thank you.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Between the Lines on WGXC at 90.7 FM. I'm the host, Anne Forbes Cooper, and I'm here with Terry Schaff, who is a medical yoga therapist. Talk a little bit about your work with the Family of Promise, which is based in Hudson, and just explain exactly what it is and what you do there.
I'm very excited about this program. This is a program that came out of Jeffrey Canada's work up in Harlem.
Now, who's Jeffrey Canada?
Jeffrey Canada was the founder of an organization called the Harlem Children's Zone, and it got established in Harlem to get families out of poverty. And it's been around for decades. It started in a 10-block radius. It's now a 60-block radius. And it started with him working with children after school and then running charter schools, public schools, Saturday programs, preschools, realizing if we're going to get families out of poverty, we're going to start working with mothers before their children are even born. So they set up baby colleges to educate women about how they would take care of their babies. It now goes through mentoring young people through college in this 60-block radius. So Hudson, the city of Hudson, has a population of only 7,000 people. But 25% of that population is below the poverty line. The entire school district of Hudson has a very large population below the poverty line. Based on the program that's going on at the Harlem Children's Zone, our President Obama and our Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, came up with a program to invite communities with a high poverty rate if they would develop programs to get families out of poverty. And they would give grants to a certain number of communities, $500,000 grants, to come up with a plan. The city of Hudson wrote a proposal for the entire education district. And the program that they used as a model that we could do this, and what you had to show was that you had different sectors of your population working together. The program that they chose to demonstrate that we could do this was one that I helped establish. It was called Kids in the Kitchen. Kids in the Kitchen Yoga Buddies. It had senior citizens, it had children, it had people in the community working with kids, teaching them how to grow crops in a parking lot in the town of Hudson, how to cook with these crops. And then while they were all making, all the dishes were in the oven, the kids would do yoga and we would sit down and eat together. And every 6 weeks, the parents would come in and participate. That was our model. So Hudson wrote this grant. It got a planning grant. It got one of these $500,000 grants. Out of that, it came up with a plan and built a consortium of nonprofits in the Hudson area to work together, which is really quite wonderful. The ownership was shared. This plan has now gone back to the federal government to be submitted for an implementation grant. Whether that happens is still not certain, because a lot of that funding for those kind of programs has been sequestered. But in the meantime, this very creative group of individuals, which is now being coordinated by a lovely young woman named Joan Hunt, came up with other ways to keep funding going. It applied for an AmeriCorps grant, which has gone into helping work with kids in Hudson. And part of that planning grant and part of some ongoing funding that was raised was for me to work with pregnant moms and teach them prenatal yoga, and also work with them after they had their children and work with them and their children. So it's a different version of what I was doing before, which was at the Hudson Youth Center, yeah. And was also through Columbia Green County Mental Health, where I was running after school programs in both Catskill and Hudson. And in those programs, I would use some of the senior citizens that had been in my yoga program and some of my Bard students, and we would go in and team teach in the two school districts until the funding ran out. So now the funding is running out again on this program. So it's in Hudson, at least my part of it, but I'm hoping that it will continue. And again, it has, interestingly enough, a medical aspect of it. I pull in my yoga students. Carolyn LaFleur, who's an anesthesiologist, has come to every one of the sessions of prenatal yoga. She answers questions that the women might have about their bodies while they're pregnant, about going through labor, about their treatment in the hospital in mm-hmm. Hudson, and she advocates for them, and she goes with them. One of my other yoga students is going to nursing school because of our program. And she comes in and she also shares her medical knowledge with these pregnant moms.
Okay. It sounds very worthy. It sounds fabulous.
It's
and I hope, I really genuinely hope that you're able to get the funding continued.
I hope we get the funding for that program. It is a incredibly worthwhile program for anyone who has a preconceived notion of who might be a welfare mom, who might be in a situation that a lot of these women that we're working with are in. All you have to do is come and be part of this program, and it will rock your socks, because these women are inspirational.
How many women and kids do you work with?
You know what? Every week it's a different story, and the women are bringing their kids. So if I'm having a bad day and the weather is bad, I might not get there. If the sun is shining, and we know we had a hard winter. So, you know, the numbers are in flux. This is really this is grassroots to change the way our society in Hudson is working.
And have they done yoga before? I mean, what's their knowledge of yoga?
That's also a good question. Almost all these women have done no yoga before. And that makes an additional challenge, because during your first trimester of pregnancy, you want to be very careful. But a lot of the kind of yoga that we're doing is on how to take care of yourself, how to breathe through pain, how to be relaxed, how not to stress your back. So we're doing very, very safe moves together.
Let's just talk a little bit about what programs you have coming up. Now, you have something at Omega?
In Omega, June 27th to 29th is the water yoga program. It'll be interesting to see if what happens at Omega is what happens at Kripalu. At Kripalu, we get a certain number of physicians, a certain number of PTs, physical therapists, a certain number of yoga teachers, of athletic trainers, people we would say sort of peripherally or definitely in the medical world. Then we get a number of people who are living in pain and looking for solutions to make themselves feel better, who may have no yoga background, and then we get yoga teachers. I don't know what's going to happen at Omega, but the way this program's designed is you do not have to know how to swim. The pool is 4 feet deep. It's 94 degrees. So the program is meant that you're going to come out of there with a practice you could either do on your own or find out if this is work that you want to do more deeply to learn more about. I'm training now with a man who works with quadriplegics and paraplegics in the water. His name is Igor Burjinka, and he has a methodology that he's been using for over 50 years. And I had let my lifeguarding certification expire because this pool is only 4 feet deep. And when I talked to Dr. Burjinka and I said, I let this expire. Do I need it? He said, you need it. So a few weeks ago, I got recertified in my lifeguarding at Bard College.
All right. Okay.
And, oh, yes, my CPR is always up to date. My first aid is up to date, but I am, again, a certified lifeguard. But the good thing about doing that is at Bard here, where you get to take classes with me, Anne, we do have a pool with a chairlift. We can get people in that pool who maybe have limited mobility. And I'm excited about these wet vests that I'm using with Dr. Burjinka, because they support your spine completely. So if you have issues because you have nerve damage, you're partially paralyzed, you'll be able to move your limbs and stay upright. So I'm excited about that water yoga program. I see more work of being able to do that in our area up here. The head of the spinal department at Columbia Memorial Hospital has said that he wants to incorporate a yoga curriculum, a medical yoga curriculum in this new spinal department. So I'm hoping we'll be able to use the pool work in that. In July, I'll be back at Kripalu with Dr. Fishman, and we'll be focusing on low back pain. What are the 6 principal causes of low back pain, to educate people? How you find out if you have it, which means going to a doctor, but also taking ownership of your own health, understanding it, and then coming in and working with the PTs and the medical yoga therapists, understanding why we're giving you these poses. Next June, Purnima and I will be doing our yoga and PT for healthy hips at Kripalu. And by then, we will be able to give CEU credits to PTs, which will be really exciting.
But the other thing I also really want to emphasize and point out is that apart from the medical yoga therapy, you are also just an excellent yoga teacher who I could not recommend more highly. And for anyone who doesn't know Terry, you can go along to one of our classes. It's at Sadhana on Warren Street in Hudson. It's a community class and it starts at 6 o'clock every Wednesday. And that's how I first met you. And 10 years later, here we are. You also teach at Bard College. And where else do you teach?
And I also teach at Arbor Ridge at Brookmead in Rhinebeck. These 2 water yoga classes, which meet twice a week, and a chair yoga class. And the rest of the time, I'm practicing with people one-on-one as a medical yoga therapist under the direction of a doctor or in collaboration with a physical therapist. I'm also writing a second book. I wrote one book that we use in our office on yoga for a healthy spine, and now I'm doing one on the protocols that we use in our office for people with all kinds of different spinal conditions. So that's pretty much taking up between all of that and it's the Promised Families program. Most of my time.
So what else would you like to add here? I see you're jumping at the bit here to add something.
I am, and this is, I can't believe I'm moving in this area too. Last fall, I gave a presentation at a neurology conference. It's the Braintree Rehab Neurology Conference in Boston. I think it was the 34th annual conference. And that opened the door of developing yoga programs for people with traumatic brain injuries.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. Right. And so I am working with a school in Boston, the Ivy Street School. It's a boarding school for teens with TBIs, traumatic brain injuries. And I'm also been approached by a couple of hospitals. So we'll see. That'll be a different area. But we do a lot of work in our office with people with pinched nerves. Pinched nerves in different parts of the body, but the brain, another interesting area.
Yeah, my goodness. Yeah, that old mind-brain connection. I mean, of course, that's what yoga is all about. So it makes perfect sense. But let me ask you something that they kind of ask when you're at a job interview. They'll say something like, where do you see yourself in 5 years time or 10 years time? Where do you see all this going in 5 or 10 years time? Where do you see you?
Well, good question. I'm 61. Very fit, but I think I will be a teacher of teachers. More writing, more training, more developing curriculum to kind of cement the world of yoga teachers with physicians and physical therapists so everybody understands the same knowledge base and can collaborate more effectively together and be involved with more research projects. The kind of yoga as we get older will change. When we're in our 20s, when we're in our teens, we're going to be more attracted, most of us, to a vinyasa, a flow yoga, as we start to get older. And we find that putting stress on our joints, holding poses, weight-bearing poses, may cause more inflammation of our joints. We might not do so much impact, so we may move a little slower.
Well, I have to say, in the 10 years I've known you, I don't see you slowing down at all. And you could put any 20-year-old to shame. And your yoga classes are a real workout.
Is that true?
Well, I think that, you know, I always feel like I've really stretched myself physically, which is what I want to do. The other thing I love about your classes is that they're never the same. Some teachers essentially just teach the same sort of routine all the time, but you vary it. We never know what we're going to get when we come into one of your classes.
And that you all keep coming is really, really quite quite wonderful, and that you all put up with my interests of the week. You managed not to say how many bones and muscles and body processes you're forced to listen to each week from me. Whether it's the week of homeostasis or hearing that the body parts that we have sound like they come out of Harry Potter, our ischial tuberosity, our sitting bones, or a pinched nerve being a radiculopathy, I find medical knowledge and to keep learning about it so intriguing and interesting. And the link of that knowledge with how we're moving, it makes it just should be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your classes are definitely fun. So,
thank you.
So, thanks so much, Terry, for being on Between the Lines. It's been a real pleasure having you here, and long may you be a yogini.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Welcome back to Between the Lines. I'm Anne Forbes Cooper, and I'm here with John McInerney, who is a psychotherapist and clinical
social
worker. Thank you, John. You know, you have so many titles, it's hard to keep up. And man about Athens.
Well, human being is my favorite one.
Okay, I'm here with John McInerney, human being. Hi, John. Welcome to Between the Lines, and we're here with we've decided to call it Kitchen Conversations, right?
Kitchen Table Conversations, because we have the creaky table.
Yes, we do this over a creaky table. Sort of atmospheric noises, though, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Cute kitchen table
creaking.
Yeah. So, what are we going to talk about today? Oh, yes, groups and power.
Well, I don't like the word power so much because it's got the wrong kinds of connotations. I think just cooperation, you know, and collaboration in communities and how that works. It's more about, for me, it's less about power and more about accountability, mm-hmm. you know, between people and politicians, people and the people who represent them and people themselves, you know.
Yeah. One example of I'm still using that word, power of the people. One example of that has been what's happening in Catskill. About a year ago, a group of people came together to form the Catskill Action Team, and they set out an agenda for what they wanted to accomplish in Catskill. And I was one of them, we started to have weekly meetings. It was led by Nina Sklansky, it was her idea, to try and initiate a series of proposals and actions to promote Catskill. And we came up with a marketing plan and a number of initiatives. From that, Catskill is Cooking, which was a competition to try and attract a local chef to come in and take over the Mayflower Cafe in Catskill. Then more people got involved, and we had an ad campaign. And we got a lot of press and publicity.
And I believe you did indeed get somebody to take over the Mayflower, is that correct?
That's correct. I think they're supposedly opening in June. And also from that initial group grew
Cultivate Catskill, led by Shelley Pulver, and that has been the group that set out to plant lots of new blooms in Catskill and plant a series of trees all along Main Street. Got involved in the America in Bloom competition and entered that and got lots of suggestions, and that's going forward. So that to me is a very grassroots example of the people taking control and actually is achieving something and establishing something. John, what's going on in Athens and in that direction?
Well, we have a group in Athens called the Athens Community Development Committee, or ACDC.
Do they play music as well?
I don't know. There might be a few musicians in there. We do have a lot of musicians in Athens. But ACDC was formed as a group of people to take on a proposal by West Point Partners, which is a conglomerate of investors who've come together to run a DC power line down to New York City. This is under Governor Cuomo's call for an energy highway to provide power to downstate. We're supposed to believe that there's a lack of power going down there to New York City and so on. Anyway, this crazy proposal has been made by this corporation called WPP, West Point Partners, and they propose to run a DC line and have a converter station not far from where the power plant is now, just outside of within the townland of Athens, up further up towards 9W. It doesn't really interfere with the village that much as it is right now. But that converter station will take up, will have a huge footprint and will take up quite a bit of open land. The most ludicrous part of the proposal is that they're going to run this DC line, which is, you know, I forget what the voltage of it is, but it's some ridiculous amount of voltage and 50,000 volts of live direct current electricity. They want to run it down North Vernon Street and bury it in a 5-foot wide trench, North Vernon Street, which at its widest point is only about 22 feet wide. It's a scenic residential street that is one of the main thoroughfares leading down to the elementary school. So that street would be torn up for a year or more. But it's not just that. It's just the whole idea that, you know, we have a target on our backs in that area, in that neighborhood, because of the power lines that run across the river. You know, they cross our country roads and our country fields before they do that. And because of the Iroquois station and also the what was formerly the GE, the Athens Generating Plant there, we're a hub for this kind of thing. So we have to really protect ourselves. I should say I'm not a member of Athens Community Development Committee because, as you know, I'm a part-time resident of the village. So it's difficult for me to get to meetings and make those kinds of commitments. But the idea that these people come in and make these proposals for our community, you know, propose to create so much disruption, really fired me up. And so I wrote a letter proposing that we ask all our currently serving representatives on either town or village board or county legislator, and incidentally, we haven't heard anything from our county legislator on this issue whatsoever. Our mayor has made his feelings known, although he did show some ambivalence at first, but at the last hearing, the last public hearing before the Public Service Commission, the mayor did stand up and was counted, as did Senator Chachik. And a lot of local people made great speeches and so on and so forth, outlining a number of terrific points about the environmental, social, and economic fragility of our community, you know, as all communities are around here. You know, at that meeting, it occurred to me, maybe we need to try to find a way to abort these kinds of attempts to to invade our community with these inappropriate projects before they start. And so I thought one way of doing that would be to ask our local government representatives to sign a pledge when they decide they're going to run for office, put together a public forum and ask them to sign a pledge to protect our community, to protect the social, environmental and economic infrastructure of our communities as a number one priority, and to do that every day and be watchful and mindful of any decision-making opportunity that comes up for them as our representatives that might enable them to employ that priority status for our community. I think that would be a great thing to do. So,
is there anybody in the community that's actually for it?
No one that I've spoken to. And that's one of the issues, is that's one of the reasons why I think a pledge would be a good idea, is because when an entire community stands up and says no to these kinds of projects, including and especially your representatives in local government, when that happens, people back off. Because they can stand being somewhat unpopular, you know, because there's money in it. So they'll ride roughshod over, depending on how the project is set up. I mean, if it comes down to it, for instance, the power lines that run across the river and run through our community, those power lines are owned by the National Grid. The right of way is owned by the National Grid, and the National Grid used to. I keep wanting to say Manifest Destiny, but it's not Manifest Destiny. It's although it might as well be what they use to take your land for. They have control of that piece of land because they basically took it under legislation that allows them to do that. But we've had a target on our backs, not before any of that stuff came in. We had a target on our backs in the 1930s, because when the engineers who developed this technology in the 80s were designing it in the 30s, they predicted this technology, and they predicted that Athens would be a good location to do it because of its access to the river, you know, so on and so forth, narrow crossing from one side to the other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think it was around the time that the Rip Van Winkle Bridge was built. So you have to be careful when one level of technology comes in, you can be sure there, you know, so you make one decision in your community and that has, systemic. A systemic effect.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that is kind of an example of the people rising up in a grassroots movement, and is much bigger than Catskill or Athens, of course, is Bring Our Girls Home, this worldwide effort to try and get the Nigerian schoolgirls.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a huge thing, and it's a really such a demonic strategy to use to fund your terrorist project, you know. In the old days, it just used to rob banks. You know, now you kidnap 200 girls and put them up for sale in the slave market. But you know, this is the vulnerability of young women in Africa is shocking to us. Most people don't understand how difficult life is for young women in Africa. I have a project in Tanzania that I've done some work on, and the area that I was working in, a town called Iringa, which is in the central part of Tanzania, the villages around that large town, the town itself has a population of about 100,000 people. The villages around that town have populations of anywhere between, you know, a few hundred and a few thousand. The school system is such that there's no public transportation. Girls have to, often they have to walk to school, sometimes as much as, you know, 2 or 3 kilometers a day there and back. They're very vulnerable in that, you know, just because of that. But then the cost of school, which is minimal, but nevertheless, it's a cost. And most people who live in these areas are, you know, basically subsistence living. So to find any kind of money to pay for your daughter to go to school is difficult, and to eat, because they get a meal at school. These girls are extremely vulnerable to being exploited for sex, sex for food, sex just because, you know, sex for protection, and so on and so forth. So this, you know, this kind of situation where you know, a bunch of lunatics can come in and kidnap 200 children, and there's nothing anybody can do about it, you know. So it's great for us to talk about bring our girls home, but I think, you know, we really in terms of protecting the young women in our communities and in communities overseas, you know, the sex slave trade is a massive business. And a lot of it hinges on the fact that many of these girls have no identity papers. Their births aren't registered. And there's no way to be able to identify who they are. So when they're crossing a border in the company of whoever they're crossing a border in the company of, you know, if there's a border guard there, they don't have any papers. There's no way to identify them, say what country they come from, how old they are, who they are, what their name is, because birth registration rates in these countries are as low as, you know, 20% sometimes. We take so much for granted in this country in terms of our security and in terms of our, and we're extremely fortunate, because there are tens of millions of people in the world who don't have the luxury of being able to kick back at the kitchen table like you and I are doing today and discuss these kinds of matters, you know.
Yes, and on that note, let's just appreciate how lucky we are. And so thanks, John McInerney, for being on Between the Lines.
Thank you.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night, and just a sprinkle of stardust and a whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away into the magic night. I softly say a silent prayer, like then I fall asleep to dream my dreams of you. In dreams I walk with you. In dreams I talk to you. Can't help it if I cry. I remember that you said goodbye. It's goodbye.
And the music you were listening to was Olafur Arnold's Near Light, Will Ackerman, A Happy Home in Kathmandu, Tycho A Walk, and Roy Orbison in Dreams.
Coming up on May 31st is an event close to my heart. It's a short plays benefit at the Hudson Opera House, put on by Plays in Progress. Plays in Progress is a group of professional playwrights, actors, directors and designers who live in the Hudson Valley and meet monthly at the Hudson Opera House, which this event will benefit. So I just wanted to give that quick shout out. And once again, thanks so much for listening. And I'll be here at the same time next month.